This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with showrooms in Canterbury and Maidstone, offering a range of new and approved used cars, including MG, Seat and Vauxhall. Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Ishmael Khawaja.
Hello, hope you're doing well and can enjoy the weather now it's brightened up a bit. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of November. Thanks for downloading today's podcast. We start with the top story on our website. A mum from Edenbridge says she's had to go abroad for a medical diagnosis because of long waiting lists on the NHS. Agnieszka Gray has been in severe pain for a year and a half, but struggled to get seen by a specialist here in the UK. But a doctor in Poland almost immediately realised she had endometriosis, which affects the ovaries.
So I was many times going to GP. They've been giving me different painkillers. I went 4 times to NAE in that pain because I just couldn't cope. The pain was just 24 hours and nothing was helping me. I decided I need to do something because, you know, I'm still in pain and they just don't believe me. Likely, I've got family in Poland who lend me money to look for endometriosis specialist. I traveled to Poland. My mom pushed me on the wheelchair because I was that weak. Basically, when I saw him, he diagnosed me in a few minutes just through gynecological ultrasound. I agreed for surgery with him, which I had 30th of September. He found endometriosis absolutely everywhere.
Well, to talk more about this, I'm joined by our reporter Charlotte Phillips, who worked on the story. So Charlotte, just explain how long Agnieszka had been struggling for and what pain she was experiencing.
So she said she'd been in constant pain for about a year and a half, and she was experiencing discomfort pretty much 24 hours a day. She'd been to a number of GPs and gynecologists and ended up going private, which she said wasn't very helpful. The doctors kept putting her on antibiotics and wouldn't send her to an endometriosis specialist when she asked them to, and she said nothing would help the pain.
It took a long time until she was eventually diagnosed and treated in Poland for endometriosis. What issues did she encounter with health services here before that?
So she went to A&E 4 times and said that her worries were kind of pushed aside by doctors and no one would take her seriously. She did have an x-ray at one point and was told that nothing was wrong, and then got a call the next day saying that she could have a problem with her hip, which wasn't the case. She did have a surgery as well, which she said wasn't helpful at all. So I think that was kind of the last straw for her to go to Poland to get surgery there.
The government insists they're giving more funding to the NHS to try and reduce waiting lists, but she must have felt let down.
I think that she definitely felt let down, and she said the whole experience caused a lot of stress for her, physically and mentally, and it also had an impact on her family. She couldn't bend down, she couldn't play with her children, she couldn't put pizza in the oven for her children, her husband had to shower her. So I think that she's felt very let down by the NHS.
And how is she doing now after the surgery?
She's doing great now. She says that the pain is a lot more manageable now, and she's tired a lot, but she feels a lot better. And is glad that she went to Poland to see a specialist there.
Thanks for those details, Charlotte.
Kent Online reports.
Some of our other top stories now. A dad of two from Kent has been described as gentle, intelligent and loving after being found dead at a rehab retreat in Malaga. An inquest turned 35-year-old Christopher Oldfield, who was born in Canterbury, took his own life at Camino Recovery in July. His family have questioned whether the facility did enough to support him. We've approached bosses for a comment. It's emerged a paper mill near Canterbury went under, owing more than £6 million. More than 100 companies have been left out of pocket following the decision 2 months ago to put the firm operating Chatham Paper Mill into administration. It's thought staff and 17 companies in Kent that are due more than £1,000 each are unlikely to get any money. The number of PCSOs in Kent looks set to be cut as part of a bid to save the police force around £7 million. It's thought as many as 200 community support officers could go, while some civilian staff also face losing their jobs. A 60-day consultation is underway, whilst they say more full-time police officers would move into neighbourhood roles. Now, there's been a sharp rise in the number of households in need of emergency housing in Kent's most deprived district. A total of 542 people in Thanet have had to be given the support during the last financial year. That's almost double than the previous one. More than 200 are also currently in temporary accommodation, meaning they would likely be homeless otherwise. Well, I've been speaking with Chris Thomas from homelessness charity Porchlight, who told me it's worrying but not surprising.
People in Thanet and people all across the county, in fact, are being really squeezed by the rising cost of living. It's pushing poorer households towards homelessness, and you know, we're heading towards a crisis, so it's not that surprising, sadly, that a lot of people are finding themselves in this position.
Yeah, and like I said, it's obviously not just a Thanet specific issue, but we know that Thanet, of course, is the most deprived district in the county. So how important is investment in this particular time, you know, for the local authority to be able to meet this emergency housing demand?
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, we work with Thanet Council, we work with other councils, and we're all doing what we can to help people. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, there's not nearly enough money coming in from central government to allow us to tackle these issues. It's a big problem, and we need central government to actually take these problems seriously, give the right amount of money, give, you know, provide more social housing where people can actually live, do more to help people who are struggling to pay the bills and put food on the table. The government, central government, has to step up, really.
Yeah, and you allude to it already, but how much is the cost of living crisis playing a part right now, leaving many families in a desperate situation?
The people we were talking to before the cost of living crisis hit, you know, they were already struggling, and now they're in a much worse position, you know, and people who weren't struggling before, now they're finding it difficult to pay the bills as well. It's going to have a massive knock-on effect. And then to add to that, you know, you're starting to see landlords selling up, landlords turning their properties into like Airbnbs, because they're more lucrative, and as a result, people are losing their homes. So you have this sort of perfect storm of things happening that's really, really making it difficult for a lot of people right now.
Is your organisation feeling a lot more pressure at the moment? I imagine you're getting a lot more people contacting you, asking for help.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of people out there right now who need help, a lot of people who... you know, there's a lot of people who are on the streets and need help. There's a lot of people who are in their own homes for now, but they're struggling, and we're doing what we can. But it's difficult. You know, organisations like Porchlight, local councils, we can only do so much, and we will do everything we can to help people. But it all comes down to central government needing to step in and sort of address the issues that are putting people in this position in the first place.
Obviously, we're heading through these winter months now. It's getting a lot colder. The weather's getting pretty miserable. Just tell us what it must be like for someone who is on the streets, and we know how particularly tough it gets during the winter.
Yeah, it's dangerous to be homeless at any time of the year. In the winter, it's especially dangerous. It can be deadly. You know, people are outside. You've seen what the weather's like today. They've probably got no shelter. It's just a really, really difficult time, and we're all trying to do as much as we can to bring people in from the cold. But there's a crisis brewing. It's worrying. Something needs to be done by the government, really.
This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with car dealerships in Canterbury and Maidstone.
The Home Secretary says it's becoming incredibly difficult to find accommodation for asylum seekers who are crossing the Channel in small boats. A controversial processing site in Thanet has now been cleared following concerns about overcrowding and poor conditions. It's understood the government's bought up extra space in hotels, giving evidence to the Home Affairs Committee in Parliament. Suella Braverman said she wasn't sure when the huge backlog in asylum cases will reach a manageable level.
I agree that there is the backlog is too high, and we are developing comprehensive plans to tackle and reduce the asylum backlog. There are three primary mechanisms that we aim to do that. Firstly, increasing the productivity of caseworkers by streamlining, digitising and simplifying the process through the delivery of our transformation programme and the PACE programme. Secondly, tackling the legacy caseload in a balanced way. And thirdly, the recruitment of new decision makers. The average decision, or the rate of decision making is one decision a week per decision maker. We need to increase that. And that's why we are increasing the number of asylum caseworkers. We've done that by 80% from 597 staff in 2019-20 to more than 1,000 today. And we're on course for a further 500 people by March of next year, which would take our total to approximately 1,500. There is far too much delay in the system. It is too slow. And there are different elements within our overall visa asylum decision-making system where decisions can be made in a much quicker fashion. And I'm very keen to see what we can learn. I'm looking at how can we try and streamline using technology. I agree that we are in a crisis, and I don't think it's fair to try and minimise the challenge that we are facing, or to suggest that it's easy to fix. The reality is that this is a really complex challenge.
She also got a bit flustered when one of the MPs asked what safe and legal routes are available for refugees.
Well, we have an asylum system, and people can put in applications for asylum.
How would I do that?
Well, you can do it through the safe and legal routes that we have offered 390,000 places to people seeking safety from various countries around the world.
I'm not Syrian, I'm not Afghan, I'm not Ukrainian. What scheme's open to me?
Well, if you are able to get to the UK, you're able to put in an application for asylum.
But I would only enter the UK illegally then, wouldn't I?
Well, that would, if you put in your application for asylum upon arrival, that would be the process that you enter.
How could I arrive in the UK if I didn't have permission to get onto an aircraft legally to arrive in the UK?
Let me just invite other colleagues if there's anything they want to add.
I mean, you could engage with UNHCR. I mean, depending which country you're from, you could engage with UNHCR, and that would be a way of getting leave to enter the UK in order to put in an asylum claim. But I accept that there are some countries where that would not be possible.
I think the point is that there's a shortage of safe and legal routes other than for specific groups of people that we have generously offered safe haven to.
Meanwhile, there are still concerns about asylum seekers that were being held at the processing centre in Thanet. At one stage, 4,000 people were at the facility in Manston, despite it being designed for just 1,600. Tricia Austin is a local Green councillor.
I'm pleased that there aren't people there suffering the conditions that they were suffering during the most busy period. But obviously one has to be concerned about where people have gone, what's happened to them, what stage their processing is at. There's also been a death there and examples of disease and so on. So obviously we're concerned about the health of people there as well, and to make sure that nobody is suffering as a result of their period at the camp.
There have been reports that the government have actually moved these asylum seekers to kind of hotels and other accommodation. So do you think that this is a positive thing? I mean, they were living in quite shocking conditions at Manston.
I think being in better conditions has obviously got to be a good thing. The difficulty is we as the council have had no information about this. We didn't know the camp was being cleared. We had no negotiation at all with the government. And the same is true of other councils. So people are being, dare I say, dumped in a variety of hotels and other accommodation across the country with no negotiation at all with local organisations. The Home Office is setting up large contracts with providers that simply buy up accommodation, and that then has a knock-on effect on other people who need housing. So the government really does need to be talking to local authorities before it goes ahead and does things like this.
Is this something you've been raising to your council leader and to your fellow councillors?
Certainly, and it's something the council leader I know has been really concerned about, because one of the places that was chosen for accommodation here was somewhere that we had hoped to be using perhaps to convert into accommodation for our own homeless people or people on the housing list. So there's a tension there. It's not that we don't want to be welcoming. Ramsgate is one of the places where the Dunkirk little ships went from. We have a long and proud history of welcoming people into this country and into this area. And we've, for example, we run a support group for Ukrainian refugees There's a lot of Ukrainian people in the town and they've been made extremely welcome. But on the other hand, we do have to look at what the issues are here. And the government has handled this appallingly badly. My understanding is that they were offered by the French government a processing centre on the other side of the channel, and they've repeatedly turned it down. And as a result, we've got desperate people risking their lives and the lives of their children in tiny boats in the busiest shipping lanes in the world. It's just ridiculous.
So how do you think this could have been dealt with differently? How can we support asylum seekers in a more effective way in your eyes?
Oh, where can we start? I think we need proper processing at the other side of the channel in this case, but also we need to be working with other countries. I'm afraid Brexit hasn't helped in this regard, because we've done this thing about we've got our sovereignty, we don't need to talk to anybody else. And actually, it's been extremely unhelpful. Many of our own students, for example, have lost opportunities to go and study abroad as a result of the loss of freedom of movement. So it's had a really bad effect across the board. So from the point of view of asylum seekers, we need to be able to process their claims quickly, much, much more quickly than we are doing. But also, we need to be giving them permission to work. As soon as we know that they're here and they've got some kind of a valid claim that's worth pursuing, then we need to allow them to work. We've got the ridiculous situation at the moment where we're incarcerating people in one place at the same time as saying we haven't got enough jobs in another place. We haven't got the workers to do the jobs that we need. It's a really backwards situation, and the government really needs to have sat down and thought it out. It seems to be a series of knee-jerk responses rather than a proper strategy.
Elsewhere, Charity says more work needs to be done in Kent around getting people to talk about racism. It's after police revealed there had been 16 reported cases of racial abuse at football matches in the county since 2017. Four of those led to charges. Show Racism, the Red Card, is calling on local authorities to work with them to help tackle the issue. Emergency services in Kent are urging us not to call 999 needlessly or inappropriately after putting up with more than 6,000 abandoned or hoax calls last month. SECAM, the ambulance service that covers counties including ours, and Kent Fire Rescue say it wastes valuable time and resources. A Kent MP has called for Just Stop Oil to be classified as a criminal organisation. Darford's Gareth Johnson spoken out in the Commons after two men climbed the Darford crossing last month as part of a climate protest, closing it for more than 36 hours.
They then attacked artworks, the M25 and anything else to cause misery and mayhem. Yeah. These people are not protesters, they are criminals. Yeah. Will the Prime Minister therefore consider making Just Stop Oil a proscribed organisation so that they can be treated as the criminal organisation they actually are?
The Prime Minister says the police have the government's support in minimising disruption and tackling illegal activity. It's emerged bosses in Medway had to fork out £435,000 to clear rubble that was illegally dumped next to a main road. The council had to remove nearly 1,400 tonnes of commercial waste, equivalent to the weight of seven blue whales, off the A289 Hastie Road near Wainscott. It took an external contractor with specialist equipment 10 days to dispose of it. An Ashford cyclist says she's lucky she wasn't injured by an open manhole that was covered with an upside-down shopping trolley. Jackie Dodson almost went down it while travelling into work in the dark earlier this week. The manhole cover in an alleyway at the bottom of Osborne Road in Willsborough near the railway bridge has now been replaced. Now, the winter season is officially underway for the people who make sure our roads are clear of frost and snow over the next few months. The Kent Online podcast has been told how almost 120 gritters are on standby, along with more than 63,000 tonnes of salt. National Highways bosses will also be monitoring over 50 weather stations. Matt Salt is from the organisation, which has four depots covering the county. He's been chatting with Nicola.
We're planning for severe weather throughout the whole year. It's not just the winter or the summer. It's 12 months for us. So we're dealing with heavy rain, fog, wind, snow, and obviously extreme heat. So yes, we did see a bit of that in the summer, but obviously now we're focused really on the cold stuff, the snow. We've got obviously, we've been prepping all year. We've got the new gritter fleet across the southeast. We've got over 60,000 tonnes of salt, 400 trained drivers ready and waiting for when the forecast does turn cold to obviously be able to react as quickly as possible to make sure our network remains safe for our customers.
Tell us about this new fleet of Gritters then.
Yeah, so we've got a new Gritter fleet as of 2021. So this will be their first winter being used in earnest. They've got bigger capacity, so we can put more salt on the road. They can travel faster, so we're not inconveniencing the travelling public as much. And also they're more visible, so we put big red and white and orange stripes on the back, so you can clearly see them, so people won't know the Gritters are coming, and they're easier for our drivers to use. So on the whole, it's a great improvement and investment for us as a business.
And as you mentioned there, an awful lot of salt in storage around the county and around the southeast. For Kent, can you tell us a bit more about the logistics, like where those Gritters will be going out from?
In Kent, we've got four main depots. I'm currently sat in one down at Stamford near Folkestone. We've got one up at Farthing Corner at the top of Kent, and one in the middle at Cold Harbour, and one just to not quite in Kent, but in Sussex near Weatherhill. So we've got good coverage across the whole of our roads, the motorways and trunk roads, the A roads across the county, all of which have got salt barns, which store up to 5,000 tonnes of salt each. Plus, each of those depots has got a fleet of Gritters with dedicated drivers there. Plus, we also have 8 reserve Gritters across the county, just in case of any issues with those fleets. So we've definitely got enough salt, definitely got enough Gritters, and we've got enough trained drivers to deliver the service, which runs right through now to the end of April.
I was interested to see that you're monitoring like 50 weather stations. I mean, it's an awful lot of, it's never guesswork, is it? It's got to be quite scientific as to when you send the fleet out. What sort of temperatures do we need to get to for you guys to say, actually, we need to head out and treat the roads?
Yeah. Well, yeah, sure, right. We've got a team of winter verifiers who are checking the forecasts twice a day. That's provided by the Met Office to us. We're reviewing that. Obviously, also factoring that we're on a coastal location, so moisture in the air might be higher around Kent. So we really, you know, we're not just taking the raw data, we're putting local knowledge to that as well. And we've got some more vulnerable locations, particularly the hills and the wider countryside. So we're looking at those. So yes, we're looking at temperatures less than 1.5 degrees. Anything below that is when we really start to gear up to go out. And also the moisture in the air. So we might not need to go out if it's a really dry cold, but if there's moisture, then we'll go out. So yeah, about that the number is about 1.5 degrees. Anything around there or lower, that's when we'll be gearing up. And we've got people on standby 24 hours a day, ready to load the Gritters and off they go on there. All the runs are 2 hours, which we can comfortably do in that time, and distance to really hit our network well.
Kent Castle features in a new Netflix series about Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, which is out today. His second wife grew up at Hever near Edenbridge. The 3-part docudrama tells the story of how they ended up together. And this really must mean it's nearly Christmas. The Coca-Cola truck is going to Bluewater on Friday. They're supporting charity Fair Share to try and ease food poverty this festive season.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham have been unable to climb out of the League Two relegation zone after last night's match. The game at Crawley Town finished in a goalless draw. It follows a disappointing defeat to Newport Town on Saturday, which left boss Neil Harris frustrated. He's still not happy with the result, as the Gills have now gone 8 league games without a win. Our sports reporter Luke Cordell spoke to him after the match.
The reaction tonight was so much better. You know, we competed every ball, played on the front foot, we pressed when we could. Ultimately, should have won the game. Again, so I'm here again. So I'm pleased with the response from Saturday. I'm pleased with the players played on the front foot. I would say we played more Gillingham-like at times today, but we should have won the game. And so again, I'm disappointed we've not won the game, because the chances we created, we've missed absolute sitters. Absolute sitters. I'm just saying this to the boys, I said, look, I'm not condemning you. It's the hardest thing in football matches to score a goal and get a decent referee at times. But we should have won that game today. And at some stage, the players have to take ownership of sticking that ball in the net. We've controlled the game, we've dominated the game pretty much. Even without the ball, we were comfortable in shape. And then we had all the best chances. And it was a strong performance. I wouldn't put it down as a really good performance, it was a really strong performance by us. And it's more what I expect. And sooner or later, something has to drop for us. It was a stonewall penalty in front of our fans on Will Wright. Ref doesn't give it. And we've missed some sitters, haven't we?
Quite a bit of debate about holding on in the box and dragging people down of late in the World Cup. I mean, that was a penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like, I'm going to go see the referee now, and I'm not going to go rant and rave at him because this doesn't achieve anything, but it's a penalty. Will gets the wrong side of their player and he gets spun round and pulled to the floor. So if everyone's a penalty at the World Cup after Harry Maguire's, obviously, which we know was a penalty, but they've obviously had a ticking off for not giving it, that has to be a penalty. But how can 1,000 people see it, you see it, their bench laugh about it, and then the people didn't see it was the officials? So again, it's just, I very rarely bemoan officials. All I'd say again, it's just a little something that just hasn't got in our way, is it?
They're travelling to Dagenham and Redbridge this weekend for the second round of the FA Cup. To cricket now, and Kent Zaccaroli is heading to Australia to make his T20 Big Bash League debut. The 24-year-old has been called up as an international replacement player for the Hobart Hurricanes. His Kent teammate Sam Billings is part of the Brisbane Heat squad. And gymnast Georgia May Fenton is going to be a special guest at this year's Medway Sports Awards. The Commonwealth star won gold at this year's Games in Birmingham and silver at the recent World Championships in Liverpool. Prizes will be handed out to clubs, coaches and individuals from the towns next month. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also sign up to The Briefing to get a daily update of the top stories each morning. Just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with showrooms in Canterbury and Maidstone, offering a range of new and approved used cars, including MG, Seat and Vauxhall.